warning.
As a station, we believe in playing content with artistic and cultural merit, and sometimes that category includes material which can be construed as offensive. For those who have children nearby or are sensitive to provocative material, the following broadcast may have strong language, themes, or be otherwise objectionable. Please consider tuning out and revisiting CITR after this program.
Over a hill and under a misty mountain, deep within the unceded Musqueam territory of Vancouver, British Columbia, I'm Doug Vandelay with another episode of Comedy Zeitgeist. You can follow the show on Twitter at Comedy Zeitgeist and pester me at Doug Vandelay. Hello to everybody listening on CITR 101.9 here for the first 30 minutes of the show. The Mario and Luigi of comedy and improv, I'm here with Manny Vu and Malcolm McLeod. How's it going, fellas?
I'm good, how are you?
Well, thanks.
You're the Luigi, but you're not thinner.
No.
You're just taller.
Yeah.
And a can of worms here.
Yeah.
But I am definitely the more...
The villainous one.
Villainous one, yeah, yeah.
So is it more of a like a Wario and Waluigi type situation?
Maybe.
I'm more of a Waluigi.
Yeah, then you're more Waluigi. I'm not, yeah. I'm too tall to be Wario. I'll take Luigi. I always like Luigi.
It's a Luigi and Wario situation.
Yeah. Do you have an older sibling?
No, I'm the oldest, actually.
Right, because I usually find Luigi is the mainstay of the second child.
Yeah, I think if it's like me and my brother, I feel like then I'm Mario and then he's Luigi. But yeah.
Is it just the two of you?
I also have a half-sister, so.
And then, more of a Peach or Toad.
Yeah, Peach.
I'm the youngest of six.
Oh my god, what do you get left with there, like Diddy Kong?
Yeah, you're like Toad.
I'm Birdo.
Birdo.
That's Birdo.
Is that one of those like weird Bowser spin-offs, like Lenny?
No, it was a bad guy. I think it was in the Yoshi era.
Is Birdo the ghost?
It's the girl that shoots eggs.
Oh, right. Yeah. How is Yoshi not a girl? He lays eggs. I don't know. That's a whole can of worms, too, but...
That is also true.
Yeah, I always...
Thought of the gender of Yoshi, though.
Yeah, I always kind of assume if anyone's going to be a gender, it's going to be Yoshi.
Yeah, right.
And Toad.
Whatever a Toad is.
I always assumed Toad was a man.
Is he wearing a hat or is he a mushroom?
Ooh.
I've seen these like memes and it's disturbing to see him without the mushroom cap on.
See, I picture you I picture you as a Toad.
Rude.
You know what I mean?
Because you're wearing a hat right now.
So you guys are the hosts of Blood Feud Comedy. Tell us a bit about the format of the show.
It's the first kind of like half of the show is a stand-up show with four stand-ups. It's open with Malcolm and I doing a lot of like banter and bits and just like messing with the crowd a bit. Mm-hmm. We don't really mess with the crowd. I don't even know why I say it. We ask them like two questions and then we stop talking to them and then go back to us.
We sometimes like talk to the crowd depending on the mood of the show. I feel like there's some shows where you're like, oh yeah, the crowd wants to like engage, and other shows you're like, the crowd's like, here just to watch.
And then we were at that one show where that guy engaged too much and just shut up the whole show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Were we still picking him up? Yeah, right.
Sick.
Oh, okay. No wonder.
Okay.
Classic nightmare situation.
Yeah. Was this guy like a heckler?
He was just chatty and would respond to anything we would say. And you're just like, stop talking now. It's not, we don't need your response to just our sentences to each other.
Yeah, I think it's like he almost wanted to be like the third host.
Yeah, he wanted to be part of the show. You don't get a lot of negative hecklers in the city.
What do you think is more damaging, someone like that or a heckler?
I guess I do improv, so I feel like
we don't really get
hecklers. I mean, I would assume a negative heckler would be...
But a negative heckler, you can get kicked out.
Hmm.
Which is sweet. Someone who's just like, I'm trying to help. And you're like, I don't want to kick you out.
Yeah. But the show, it's the first half is, a kind of a traditional stand-up show. And then the second half, it's a long-form improv show loosely inspired by the stand-up. So I join the improvisers. And there's usually six of us all together. And then we do like a very loose tap, sweeps, cut to kind of inspired by the stand-up.
It's a weird, fun mix of shows. It was basically a ploy to get all of my, like, comedy friends together. because I'm a stand-up, and I hang out with a lot of improvisers. So it was basically like, hey, let's all just, like, come do this show. You get to see some stand-up. Stand-ups get to see some improv, and you kind of, like, get to know each other a little more.
Yeah, it's sort of a marriage of the two worlds, because I feel like stand-up and improv, at least in, I guess in all cities, are very separate.
Well, this is the name of the show, is Blood Feud, just because there's that rivalry between the two.
Yeah.
And it's all just a ploy to trick people to coming to the show.
I was actually, I had Randy Neumeier in a few weeks ago, who hosts the list, and I was talking to her afterwards about how I was thinking of either taking a stand-up class or an improv class, and she said, if you want to have fun and make friends and have a good time and be happy, do improv.
Correct. 100%.
Yeah, I think that's right.
And that's speaking as she is a stand-up, so.
Yeah, and stand-up classes aren't too necessary. Like, I took a stand-up class, but that's because I wasn't going to take the stage unless I did.
Yeah, or sort of just like a...
A kick in the ass kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Can I swear?
Yeah, of course.
Cool.
Did you already have material?
The class was just like, every week you'd be like, write some jokes, we'll do them in class. Mm-hmm. And at the end of like a month and a bit, we had a full show.
Did they tell you how to write jokes?
Kind of. They were like, this is basic joke structure.
Right.
And you kind of like went with it. But then now I don't even know if I followed like those rules. I probably do. I'm trying to be like a badass rebel. I'm like, I'm not doing anything by the rules, but I'm probably just like doing standard stuff.
So how long have you both been pursuing comedy in various forms?
For me, I think it's been around 5.5 years. Since I first took my first like improv class, and then kind of from there, I was sort of hooked on it and have just been doing it ever since.
Was your first year very consistent?
What do you mean?
Like, were you doing shows, like, monthly or, like, weekly kind of situation your first year?
I would say maybe I guess the first 6 months was, like, every other month. Like, I remember signing up for a class at Instant Theater, and what it was at the end of it, you got to do a show, and that happened to be my first show. And I wanted it because I was, like, I'd done improv in high school, but I didn't really think, oh, there's anything more to it than just high school drama. And then from there, yeah, did the first show that day. I was so terrified the whole way. Like the moment I woke up to like when the show was over, it was like, oh my God, I'm doing this. But then it was kind of so gratifying that I ended up signing up for Instant Theater's conservatory program, which I don't know if it exists anymore. And then kind of from there, I started making connections and friends and getting onto different people's shows. So it was a bit of a slow climb. So, I was slower at the start, but now I'm doing a couple of shows a week.
What was the conservatory program?
Okay, at least they used to have a conservatory program run by Alistair Cook, in which you would sign up, you do 3 months with a specific group, and like every month you would do a show, and so you'd just be working on different stuff. So like based on your skill level, he'd put you in with like...
It's like a very beginner level kind of thing.
Yeah, it was a way to like start getting show experience and start like meeting people. Because the other places at the time weren't really off, like Blind Tiger Comedy, which I ended up, I'm still involved with, they didn't exist at that point. And then Vancouver Theatre Sports League was undergoing a transformation of their education program. So I guess, the conservatory was just a way of getting shows and, meeting people because it would, every couple of weeks you would do a show.
Because it's hard just to do improv. There's no place that you can just like... Like, tonight, I could be like, I want to do stand-up tonight, and I can go do that, basically. Whereas improv, that's not an option for the most part.
Well, there was also, when I was starting out, this place called Rowan's Roof, and it was basically an open mic for improv. Rowan's Roof doesn't exist anymore, but it would be like every Monday, you would go sign up, and you would just sort of, I guess now what they would call like an improv jam, which is sort of the equivalent to an open mic. And you would just like go there, and I would also meet people there who would then invite me when it came to their shows to like actually do shows. And I guess it's a shame that Rowan's Roof doesn't exist anymore because it was like where I met.
But it's great because the first person who ran it was a problem.
Yeah, it kind of shut down because the showrunner of that show had some...
He's problematic.
Had a very, a problematic himself. History.
Not Rowan, the guy who ran the show.
No, yeah.
There's very, very rare is the owner of a venue, the guy who runs the comedy.
Yeah.
The only place that I know that exists is Kino.
With Steve Allen?
With Steve Allen. And Steve Allen ran a comedy show there for years. And then the owner of the Kino was like, I'm going to sell this place. And Steve's like, I'll buy it. And he bought it. And now he just like keeps running that show. It's the longest running show in Vancouver.
Cool.
Every Tuesday.
Yeah, I recently went back to where Rowan's is, and it's now a Japanese restaurant with no stage or anything. So they've definitely, that restaurant has just moved on.
Where is it?
It was on in Kits, it's just off 4th and Vine, like right across the street from the Safeway.
Okay, I'm not too familiar. It's my 11th month here, but I haven't spent too much time in
Kitsilano area.
Kitsilano. Yeah.
I went to Dark Table. You've been there?
No.
No, but I've heard of it.
Have you heard of it?
I know of it, yeah.
It's pretty weird. The food was good, but I thought it was something different the whole time.
Like, you're like, is this chicken or fish?
Well, I got the surprise meal.
Oh.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, you would have to. I would have to do that. I'm like, I don't know what I'm getting. Who cares?
I was pretty scared of it, but it ended up being like a veal something,
mm-hmm.
which I never would have ordered normally, but... And that's why I couldn't pick it, because like, I don't have it ever.
Did you use a fork and knife, or did you use your hands?
Oh, I used a fork and knife.
Yeah, it must change like the how you eat the food, because like, I feel like so much of food is seeing it. And then if like you're eliminating eating... that sense, then other senses are supposed to be heightened. Like
even me eating with you guys in public and me eating alone at home is very different.
Yeah.
The main thing that was weird for me was not knowing how much was left at any point. It felt like I had a full plate right up until I had nothing.
That's what you get for using fork and knife. Hands, you know how much you have.
Yeah, you can feel it. I did definitely touch everything.
Yeah.
Like, very gingerly. But I have no idea how big the place was or anything. There was this really obnoxious group sitting near us that clearly didn't understand the format at all. And they were just saying things like, oh, it's so dark in here and stuff. And when the guy came around, they asked up, what did they ask the waiter?
If he could see...
And the whole point of the restaurant is that all the waiters are blind.
Oh,
so
yeah.
They're used to moving around in the dark. Yeah. And he's just like, oh, no, I'm blind. Which was awkward for them.
It's like, no, this is whole thing is so you can experience what we experience every day at all for our lives.
Did you use, when you were drinking your drink, did you use a straw or did you have to guess?
Yeah. I didn't even pick up my drink. I was too scared. I just left it and sort of leant over. Yeah. It was really good. It was kind of experimental mojito, but it was too long ago to remember.
Did they give you a bib? I feel like they should give you a bib.
No, they didn't.
Because like, it's fine.
I leant over like a horse into a feed bag the whole time.
I wonder if Dark Table is going to be really affected by like the straw ban that's in Vancouver. Maybe.
That straw ban is going to affect a lot of things. It's the Slurpee business. I don't know how that's going to function.
Do you think they'll bring in straw replacements with like...
who knows? Maybe they've had like actual like reusable straws the whole time at Dark Table. You just don't know because you can't see it.
Yeah, because I've seen places that use like pasta straws.
Yeah, I was in a place in San Francisco earlier this year, and they had paper straws, which was good for about 5 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. The paper straws, I see a disaster eventually.
Yeah, and then I ended up using 3 of them in one drink, so I don't know what the trade-off is.
It forces you to drink fast, so the business gets more booze sold. They went out in the end. It's all a scam. This is all a conspiracy. This is what I'm putting out in the world, conspiracy theory. The straw ban is for restaurants to make more money off of booze sales.
That can maybe be a upcoming episode of Talia Murdoch's Economics Podcast here on the network. So how long have you been pursuing comedy, Maddie?
I am coming up on 4 years in a couple months. I asked Malcolm about his first year thing, because my first year was like one show every couple months. So I only did like 6 shows in my first year of comedy. And then now it's just like... at least once a week, sometimes, couple like every day sometimes, who knows? So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a, like, with comedy, it's, so...
Stand-up's easier to do a lot of.
Yeah, so you can even do more, like, multiple shows in a night. Like, I think doing multiple shows in a night at improv, it's either you're at a certain venue where you're doing, like, the early show and the late show, or... It's most likely not happening that you're going to do more than one show a night.
But you guys have a lot of rehearsals, too, which is, like, extra training. And that's basically what extra sets that I'm doing is just extra training for, like, a more prestigious show or whatever.
Do you find you practice alone at all with stand-up?
I don't. I know I should, because people say I should a lot, and it just feels too awkward, even by myself.
So, I mean, you couldn't read the energy off anyone doing that. Like, it must be hard to get pacing right doing it alone.
Yeah, and I kind of, like, I don't know. I try to have this vibe of, like, where it seems like I'm really in the moment. Well, which I hope I am, too. But I think when it's too dialed in and, like, too on the nose timing-wise, it takes out some of the fun. Because I had a show at the Sunday service the first time I did it, and I was practicing so much and just, like, had it just, like, to a T joke. This is how long the laugh will probably be, next joke, next setup, blah, blah, blah. And I don't even remember being on stage because it was just, like, so dialed in. I was so nervous anyways, mm-hmm. which is kind of why I did it. And then...
Do you think that maybe worked into the nervousness, like amping yourself up so much by rehearsing it?
Oh, yeah, probably, because I did it again a couple of weeks ago. Didn't do any, like, warm-up sets beforehand, per se, and just, like, had the most fun.
Cool. I've noticed as well, like, some of the least effective improv is when you can tell someone has a scene in the bank
mm-hmm.
that they just throw in.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, even, like, when I've played with people who do that, where they have, like, a preloaded character, or, yeah, they have a premise already. Yeah, it's kind of, you lose the specialness of improv.
And the audience sees it.
And the audience sees it. Like, you know, when I've worked with players where they'll kind of explain to you who you are, where you are, what we're doing, why it's important, that's not improv then. That's, you know, ham-fisted sketch premise. It's like you might as well just write it as a sketch than, you know, do what we're doing now. Because what I love about improv is, yeah, it's that connection. It's, you know, building something together, you know, one step at a time.
Yeah.
And I think the best improv scenes are the ones where you kind of go in with almost nothing, where it's like maybe you have a loose idea of, like, the first line or maybe just an emotion. And mm-hmm. then you go from there and, yeah, you just kind of make eye contact and lock in. And then all of a sudden everyone who's playing on that set kind of knows, oh, this is what it is, and then can just feed it. Like, those moments are special, and you see that. When you see that, that's where, like, for me, that's the highlight of improv. It's kind of the hot reason you're doing improv and the high you're chasing.
Because you're creating magic.
Yeah.
Improv is basically magic, and it's crazy, and I love watching it when it's good.
Yeah, it's much easier to break down something like stand-up into a science than improv, really.
Like, yeah. Because there's, like, a structure, and, like, this is how long your setup is, and your setup can't be longer than your punchline, or else the dynamic of it is weird, or, like, there's certain, like, one-liners work a certain way, stories work a certain way, so.
Is there a meta in improv?
I think so. I think sometimes, like, when it gets meta, it's more that the players are trying to make each other laugh, so you end up getting these, like,
Sunday service is very meta. Like, yeah. Ryan Beal very much will call out a scene during a scene, that kind of situation.
Like a sort of ongoing joke.
Yeah, yeah.
I think.
Yeah, but I think even the meta jokes are built in the show, so, like, when the show is happening, that's when you're, maybe sometimes there is an inside joke being built. If it's like, oh, here's the same character coming into every scene, or, oh, looks like this person's doing this thing mm-hmm. today, because, yeah, some shows, you know, you're just going to happen just to do the same thing that you've done earlier in the show, and
sometimes you can feel the mood of the performer.
The help and support of our friends, we here at CITR wouldn't be able to bring you all the great music, art, cinema, and culture that you love. Thanks to the long-standing support from the Rio Theater, we are able to keep you informed on all the great artists, films, and everything else coming to town there. For all the current information about who and what's playing at the Rio Theater, visit their website at www.riotheater.ca.
Yeah, I think it's like even like the...
Like your last show, Raquel did a lot of weird stuff. I was like, geez, it seems in a weird place.
Yeah, that is true. So,
was this the Blood Feud?
No, it was at your house team show. Or the
no, there was a Blind Tiger house team fondue show that happened on Friday. And yeah, there's, you know, there was a, you know, the...
The energy was weird in the room in general.
Yeah, it was a weird energy, but, you know, and then that's a weird energy in the room can cause a weird show. So
always
good weird.
It's I think so. I think you can.
I think improv can fix it or like feed into it. Where stand up, you just like fight it, and you're like, this feels awful and I hate it and I don't want to be here anymore.
Yeah, I think improv, yeah, you can morph the show based on what's going on in the room, where, yeah, I think stand-up, it's harder. Like, if they're not into
my material, I was like, this is all I have, so now I'm a hooped.
Yeah, because, like, for me, some of my favorite stand-up is when it almost appears that the stand-up is making it up as they go along, that it's just this happened mm-hmm. to be like, oh, the room's all on board.
But. And sometimes when you are making up as you go, the crowd responds crazy, and you try again with what you just said, and you're like, oh, they didn't like it now. They yeah. only liked it that one time where I actually was making it up.
Yeah, the crowd work element to it.
Not even crowd work, just like riffing on it, a joke.
I've noticed you, well, from the stand-up that I've listened to in my research, that you do tend to do a lot of crowd work. Almost like you check in after your jokes as well, which is,
I do.
Which is kind
I
of
I really
a...
mm-hmm. try to connect with the audience a lot. I really, like, look at people and, like, try to, like, make a connection, like, with eye contact at least. I don't really chat with them too much. I, like, ask, there's one, like, specific question that I do ask usually when I do this one joke, but not, sometimes I can't, or, like, I'll ask, like, a general question that I don't really want one person to answer. I just, like, ask it, and I know no one's going to answer it because it's a weird question, and, like, mm-hmm. go back to my jokes.
Actually, Malcolm, I think you're probably one of the hardest guests I've had to research so far.
Ah. He's got nothing on him.
I think there's also a lot of other Malcolm McLeods, like red herrings.
Yeah, there's like a New Zealand psychic who might be share the same name as me.
That's the mistaken. One your mom wished she had.
My mom owns a tarot card store in Tawasin.
Oh, that's pretty cool though.
Yeah.
Ever talk to Kalamara about that?
No.
She does tarot readings.
I'd heard about that, but I've never, like, really gotten into it. But my mom's more of, like, a broker for psychics, if that's where. So she doesn't do any readings herself, but, like, she owns a store where you can buy the books and the
cards.
This
is a made-up character.
This is 100%
this
real.
This is a real, this is a real person
I'm a psychic
who
broker.
Gave birth to this. Yeah, so she runs it in Tawas. It's called The Reading Room. I think she'd appreciate that I'm plugging it right now.
The Reading Room in Tawasin.
In Tawasin.
Tawasin.
Yeah.
Tawasin.
It's Tawasin. I know it's.
There's a T in there, and there's an S in there, and there's a couple more S's.
Well, some people either pronounce it with the T silent or the S silent.
What if you do both, like a Russian saw?
Tawasin.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, maybe. That could work. I think it's weird, like, for me, I always grew up calling it Tawasin, but then you would, like, turn on the news and certain newscasters would say Tawasin and then other people would say Tawasin, and I was never sure what was the correct pronunciation. I just sort of went with the flow.
Right.
But she runs this store, yeah, where you can buy your stones, and so all the psychics in the town all now do their readings through...
All the psychics in Tawasin?
In Tawasin.
How many are there?
I think there's like eight or...
How big is that place?
Running. 8 or 9, I feel like. They do classes as well.
Kind of a cabal.
Yeah. I think some of them come from out of town.
No special
guests.
Just
guess. To go
special
to the
reading. Psychic.
Yeah, special guests. Like, my mom, when she was developing it, I actually helped her with her... business plan, and you know they're working on community events and really sort of tapping into the spiritual market that Tawasin's also a very religious town. It's got a lot of churches, like Catholic and Protestant, so it's catering to a whole, you know, different market in the town. But it's funny, I went on a date with a girl recently, and yeah, she brought up, she's like, oh, The Reading Room, great reputation. I had no idea. So yeah.
Was she a psychic?
She was a tarot card reader.
How's that going?
It was a one day.
Oh, okay.
But what else could you find out about me? I'm curious.
You own a house in Vancouver?
That's right.
I find that amazing. That's even rarer than like a tarot broker, right?
Yeah. No, I own a condo. Yeah. The story is that my dad passed away a few years ago. And so I used some of the inheritance money that I got from that to buy a condo just because it was a good investment. Because it was like if I did the math and if, you know, I could just keep renting, or if I bought it, you know, I would make money off of it. And, you know, all the fees in terms of like strata fees and taxes and all the rest, you know, I would basically just be going into rent anyway. So now I'm just kind of paying it back for myself. So
Nice.
Real adult move.
Yeah.
From a giant child.
I get it.
Are you living the dream?
Yeah, I guess in some ways. I mean, it's stressful because, like, I got to pay property tax in, like, in a couple of weeks. And
are you protesting with those other jackasses that own homes?
No, not that kind of guy. I think that's also, like, Van people.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's all the people who basically live in the British property.
Have you seen those signs? They had, like, a graphic designer and printed them. They're not, like, dollar store cardboard. They were, like,
they're nice
fancy
signs.
Real bougie signs.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You don't believe those people ever.
Another thing I uncovered, you performed with Ryan Stiles.
I did, yeah, once. I did a Blind Tiger house team. We went down to Bellingham, and he owns and operates the theater in Bellingham called the Upfront Theater. And so we went down kind of just expecting to just do a couple of guest shows, play with their main stage players, not really thinking that Ryan Stiles would be there.
Yeah.
And then they didn't tell us, like Upfront didn't tell us. And then they showed up and they're like, oh, the big man's here tonight. He's going to play with you guys. And we're like, who's the big man?
And then like, I'm the big man.
Because I'm the big man. And they're like, no, Ryan's here tonight. He's going to go jump in with you guys if that's okay. And I think, of course, the group's like,
saying no to that?
Yeah, no one's saying no. We're like, oh, absolutely.
It's
like
about as improv royalty as you can get.
Yeah. No, so I've been lucky. I got to perform with Ryan. And then a couple of weeks ago, actually, I finally got to meet Colin Mockery because he was at Vancouver Theater Sports, which I also do work with. And, he was their special guest, so... I didn't get to perform with Colin yet, but...
Colin's agent said no to him coming on this podcast. I've only ever been told no by agents.
Yeah.
And then either ignored or confirmed by actual performers. That's why you have an agent, right?
Yeah, I feel like, it's a barrier to entry.
But you have an agent, right?
I also have an agent.
I just went straight on your Facebook.
But so. But I think she's just say yes to everything. Anything.
Well, you're on bus ads now.
Yeah, that's true.
Have you seen those?
No.
Any bus ads?
Oh, and I go on the bus a lot as well.
Or it's on, I guess, I've only seen it on the SkyTrain.
They're starting to show up in the buses, and they're on a lot of the SkyTrain and Candleline stops. So, yeah, I'm also...
You can check it out at Blood Feud Comedy on Instagram. I posted a photo of it. It's pretty good.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, I talked about it at one of the shows, but, yeah, I got hired to... model for the Playland ad campaign that's running this summer. So I'm there. I play an employee scrubbing up emoji vomit on the roller coaster. So that was
sort of a fellow kids kind of meme.
Yeah, no, it's exactly that. Yeah. Well, they're like, oh, you look 17 on camera, so we're going to have you play the employee. So,
and also you're standing on the roller coaster and it doesn't like make you look like, it doesn't look like a giant roller coaster with you. Yeah. It just looks like a...
Well, I mean, they photoshopped. Or you're actually in a roller coaster for the show.
He's standing
I'm standing on the roller coaster. I don't know if you can pull it up, but yeah. So I'm standing on the roller coaster, with a mop. But I think because the roller coaster, like, when you stand in it, it's so deep that, like, it would already, like, if they used the photo where I was standing in it, like, it would be, like, cut off my waist. That they one of the reasons they hired me was because of my height, so that I didn't look... So, like, small compared to the roller coaster.
Because it'll make the roller coaster look scary.
We'll put this picture on our website if you guys don't mind as well.
Oh, yeah.
Do it. I love it. But, yeah, you can see. Yeah. Now, this is an audio podcast, and I'm about to describe a photo of
all. But you also got to, like, stand under the roller coaster, like, while it's not working.
Yeah.
Did they let you ride it alone?
Because the roller coaster wasn't operational, and they had a bunch of maintenance people there watching just to make sure nothing happened. But I got to, like, walk underneath the roller coaster, like, where all the tracks were, just to kind of look up, which was really cool. It was something, like, on a bucket list I didn't realize would be on my bucket list, which is to stand under a roller coaster.
Yeah.
And, like...
Like, under the mechanism? Like
the, yeah. Well, under the tracks, which they're not that far. Like, a lot of that track of the corks, that's the corkscrew roller coaster... not that far off the ground, really. Like, I had to duck under a couple of the tracks to just, like, look, and I took some photos and stuff. But it was crazy because Playland that day was also shut down, so it was completely empty.
For anyone on CITR, thanks so much for tuning in. That's the end of our time slot, but you can hear the full episode along with other podcasts on cavegoblins.com. For anyone else, stick around. We've still got lots more to talk about with Maddie and Malcolm. Now, I just want to do a little plug for Everything Economics on the Cave Goblin Network. Talia Murdoch hosts this informative and engaging podcast on, you guessed it, Everything Economics, in a relatable and easy-to-digest way. That's Everything Economics on Cave Goblin.